ശരണ്യ പ്രഭോ നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീയദ്വൈത ഗദാധ ശിവസാദി ഗോർഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഗദാധ ശിവസാദി ഗോഭക്തവൃന്ദ ജയ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീയദ്വൈത ഗദാധ ശിവസാദി ഗോർഭക്തവൃന്ദ കൃഷ്ണ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ കൃഷ്ണ ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya
जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम रामा हरे 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 कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम रामा हरे 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 कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम रामा हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम रामा हरे 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 कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम रामा हरे 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 कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीताराम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय गौरनिताय 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 जय प्रभुपदा 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 जय प्रभुपदा
പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതേശ്വര ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയശർമാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്കി ജയം നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ണോ വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതേശ്വര ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്കി അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരിഗോവർധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാംക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാംക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാംക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാംക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാംക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേത ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരൻ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ നമാമശുഭദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീ ഭക്തിവിനാഥ സ്വാമി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ഓം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണി നമസ്തേ ശിശുമണിവാണി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശദായി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്തസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയ ചക്ഷുരുന്മിലിതാം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സ്ഥാപിതാം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകദാ മഹ്യം ദദാതിം സുപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരും ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണരഘുനാഥാൻവിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനാസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാം സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാൻവിതാംശ്ച ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ തപ്തകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗി രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ വാഞ്ചകൽപതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധുഭ്യ ഏവ ച പതിതാനാം പാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭോ നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണിം ഭഗവതിം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനിം അമ്പത്വാമനുസന്ധതാമി ഭഗവദ്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണിം നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായ തപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപാം പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകബാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്ത ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസജാനൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥജല ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാവികർണഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോത്തീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈ രണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവാം പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകകേസരം ഹരികഥ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹപ്പേബീയമാനം മുദ ഭൂയാദ്ഭാരത പങ്കജക്കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യ ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്ര രുദ്രമരുദസ്വൻ വന്ദി ദിവ്യൈ സ്തവൈർ വേദൈർ സാംഗപദേർ ക്രമോപനിഷദേർ ഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമഃ. ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമഃ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം. ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So, Bhagavad Gita, we were discussing last Sunday from the 9th chapter. One of the most important chapters in the Bhagavad Gita is this 9th chapter. Why it is so important is, it's very difficult to understand this chapter. It is so difficult, this chapter, as you go further you will see, Krishna has put forward so many options to Arjuna, and asking him to understand these things, and Arjuna constantly saying, I did not understand. So that was the answer from Arjuna. So how this situation has happened, let's go back to the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, because time and again we have to remember that Bhagavad Gita is a continuous flow of things. There is a continuous flow of knowledge from the first chapter to the 18th chapter. As they are called three shalkam. Shalkams means six chapter is one shalkam. There are three shalkams in the Bhagavad Gita. The first six chapters refers to karmam. The next six refers to bhakti. And the last six refers to jnanam. That is how it is. Karmam, bhakti and jnanam. So, looking at it this way, you may wonder what is the relationship from one chapter to another. But if you closely scrutinize Bhagavad Gita, and if you read the commentaries of the great acharyas, you will find there what has started with Arjuna's Vishadam, Arjuna's distress, which was the first chapter, Arjuna Vishada Yogam. Arjuna Vishada Yogam talks about Arjuna's distress in the battlefield. You have to remember that Krishna had two major disciples when he was on the planet. He didn't make many thousands of disciples. He had only two disciples. One was Arjuna and the other one was Uddhava. And those two disciples were on two different levels. Arjuna was full of doubts when he heard Bhagavad Gita from Krishna. You will see that in the Bhagavad Gita itself. Karpanya dosha abhakrita swabhava prachamitvam dharma sammoda cheda nishre nishchidanme bruhidanme shishyasteham shadhimam tvam prapannam. Arjuna's crisis was that he did not know what action has to be performed, what was required. He didn't know. He has a doubt about his own dharmam, in other words. That was Arjuna's crisis. Arjuna had a doubt about his own dharmam. He did not know how to proceed further in life. Nishreyasthan nishchidam bruhidanme shishyasteham shadhimam tvam prapannam. That means full of doubts, Arjuna comes to Krishna. Full of doubts, Arjuna comes to Krishna. What about Uddhava? Uddhava had no doubts. Doubts were all cleared before talking to Krishna about it. That is the difference between Arjuna and Uddhava. Arjuna had all doubts in his mind, and Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita and brought Arjuna into transcendental knowledge, brought transcendental knowledge to Arjuna. But Uddhava's case, the situation was a little different. Uddhava had no doubts. Uddhava already knew what was the right thing. He has heard from the gopis. Now what more do we require? He doesn't have to hear from Krishna now, after he had heard from the gopis and what he has seen in Vrindavanam from the gopis. So the doubts are all cleared as far as Uddhava was concerned. But then why did Krishna instruct Uddhava? It is always very nice that when you have understood something, after all, in spiritual life is like that, that you are following a particular path under the instruction of the spiritual master and the Shastram. But when you have your own realizations, if Krishna tells you that what you have understood is correct, then there is something more to it, isn't it? Anyone feels
satisfied or happy at that point that what I have done in all my spiritual life is proper, is correct, and it has brought me to the right destination. So virtually Uddhava Upadesham, Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, is nothing but a confirmation of what already conclusions Uddhava has arrived at. That was the main difference between Arjuna and Uddhava. Arjuna didn't have a clue what was happening. Arjuna had a lot of doubts in his mind. So Arjuna was full of doubts, Uddhava had no doubts. All doubts were cleared. Already he knew what was the right thing to do. After 112 years of association with Krishna, he had learned what is required. Namostu de mahayogin prapanna manushadhimam yatha twacharanam bhoje ratesyal anabhayini. That two lines will tell you that Uddhava had a clear vision of what he wanted in life. Namostu de mahayogin prapanna manushadhimam yatha twacharanam bhoje ratesyal anabhayini. Only one thing Uddhava asked Krishna: a continuous attachment to Krishna's lotus feet without any breakage ever after. This is all what Uddhava asked Krishna at the time of departure. He didn't ask anything else. So from there you can see that Uddhava had already reached that state of consciousness where he had no questions to ask anymore. And that is why when Krishna instructed Uddhava, you can see it was on a completely different level. We'll discuss that when we come to Ekadashaskandam. Ekadashaskandam is the whole nerves of Srimad Bhagavatam is there, what Krishna has spoken there. But coming back to Bhagavad Gita, which is the introduction to Ekadasham actually, in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna expressed his distress to Krishna in the first chapter, so many verses Arjuna talks and logicizes his own decision for what he was doing. So at that time, in the second chapter, Krishna starts on the verse 10 onwards. Krishna takes over from there, isn't it? And verse 10, I think. He says there that Ashochyananya shojastvam pratyavadam shabhashase gadasuna gadasumscha nanushojandi pandidaha. That Krishna immediately crushed Arjuna's ego at that time and started telling him that, first of all, you have to understand what is spiritual life. And that's where he begins with Arjuna. With Uddhava, there was no such necessity. Uddhava had gone through all that long ago. So he says to Arjuna that gadasuna gadasumscha nanisha ojandi pandidaha. Coming and going is always there in this world. Learned people don't get concerned about it. They don't worry about it. Why? Through two different topics, what Krishna discussed in the second chapter, Jnanam and Karmam. That's what he has discussed. Chapter translated as Sankhya Yogam, but Sankhyam is Jnanam there, and Yogam is Karmam. So two different topics Krishna discussed there. Krishna spoke about Jnanam, and Krishna spoke about Karmam also. Jnanam means the pure transcendental knowledge, the transcendental nature of the living entity, of the spirit soul, which we are. And how to break away from the identity of the body and to be situated in one's own true identity as a spirit soul. First of all, Arjuna, one has to learn that. And that is where spiritual life begins. And then Krishna spoke about karmam. Karmam in what sense? Through four sutrams, which you will see there. Karmanyevadhikaryaste ma bhaleshu kadajana ma karma bhalahe durbur madho sangostva karmani. Four things Krishna spoke in that about how to execute karmam in this world and the importance of execution karma yoga. These things Krishna spoke in that chapter, in the second chapter. So after hearing these two topics, jnanam and karmam in the second chapter, Arjuna got confused, which is more important. Is Krishna asking me to cultivate spiritual knowledge or Krishna asked me to execute karma yoga? This was his question. So, in the third chapter, beginning with, you can see this. The third chapter begins with Arjuna asking Krishna, what am I supposed to do? On one hand, you are telling me that the transcendental knowledge is superior. On the other hand, you are telling me that karma yoga must be executed. So, what am I supposed to do? Arjuna's a question. Krishna says to Arjuna, karma yoga, he discusses the whole of karma yoga in that chapter. What is karma yoga means? And what happens with karma yoga? That is where Krishna talks about evam pravartidam chakram, that everyone in this material world is in that wheel of karma, and that is going through all the time, and that one cannot separate oneself from that. Krishna says to Arjuna, evam pravartidam, but one who understands that chakram, that wheel, and acts accordingly, Krishna says, he is properly situated, he is a yogi, he is karma yogi. And he also talks about in detail about yajnam, how life should become a yajnam. If it is not a yajnam, Krishna says, you are verily eating the sin. So therefore, Krishna explains to Arjuna in that third chapter, the importance of karma, how one should execute one's karma in this world, how to get oneself free from the reactions of one's own activities in this world by executing karma yoga. All these things are discussed in detail in the third chapter. So third chapter is very important because that is the first guideline to the conditioned soul. When we come to this world, we have no knowledge how to function in this world. We do all sorts of things without any understanding of what we are getting implicated in that. So in order to discipline our own life and to make an understanding how to function in this world, Krishna spoke Karma Yogam to Arjuna. And through that chapter, when one studies that Karma Yogam properly, one will have a clear understanding that what's right and what's wrong. And how implicating it is, the karma, powerful karma, which controls us all throughout. And what's the importance of performing everything as a yajnam. Yajnam means sacrifice. Sacrifice means not only, Krishna's karma yoga is not only purely Vedic sacrifices, but completely to tune the life, to gear up the life in such a way that all activities are as an offering to Krishna. And how one can free oneself from the reactions of karma. That's all discussed in the third chapter. As soon as the third chapter was over, in the fourth chapter, Arjuna has got this doubt again. Questions, Arjuna starts asking questions there. Arjuna got confused. Still Krishna hasn't answered the question, whether I should go for jnanam or whether I should go for karma. That is why in the fourth chapter you find Krishna says to Arjuna that the goal is neither jnanam nor karma. They are just the processes. The goal is Krishna. That is what one has to understand. That goal is Krishna, not jnanam or karma. So, only in that context, Krishna has spoken about jnanam and karma. Up to that point, Krishna has spoken about jnanam and karma only in that context. And also in the fourth chapter, Krishna talked about the karma yoga from the very beginning. How it was followed by the great kings, how they followed that. Generally in the Varnashrama system, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas are on the personalities who control the Vedic culture. Who protect the Vedic culture who sustains the Vedic culture. Generally, Brahmanas are Brahmanishtas. They are fixed in the knowledge. And Kshatriyas are Karmanishtas. They are fixed in the karma. Arjuna was a Kshatriya. He is supposed to follow the laws of karma. So therefore, Krishna explained to Arjuna that this is the situation that the karma originally, which was executed by the great kings, Rajarshis they were called, starting from not only Lord Ramchandra, even prior to that, Krishna talks about all of them, and in due course how that got deteriorated in this world, and Krishna wanted to bring it back into life again, and that is how he spoke about the fourth chapter, which is called as Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. It is neither jnanam nor karmam. Karma Sannyasam and Jnana Sannyasam, both are discussed in that fourth chapter. And the way Karma Yogam over a period of time has changed in this world. And then Krishna brought back the whole philosophy there about the particular nature of the karma and how the karma can influence a person's life from different angles. Krishna has discussed there. And what is different as types of karma, akarma, vikarma, all those things are spoken in that fourth chapter. So when the fourth chapter was over, when the fourth chapter was discussed, Arjuna had another question to ask now. At the end of fourth chapter, Krishna spoke about what is called the Adibhu. Krishna spoke about Karma Sannyasam also. So Karma Sannyasam and Karma Yogam, they are two different things. But Krishna says, when he spoke about karma sannyasam, one who wants to give up karma, that is called karma sannyasam. What happens to a person and who is qualified to give up karma? Those things are discussed in that fourth chapter at the very end. Yoga sannyasta karma nam, Krishna says there. What happens with karma sannyasam? So karma sannyasam was discussed, karma yogam was discussed earlier. So Arjuna now got the doubt, which is the one I should follow. Should I take to Karma Sannyasam? Should I take to Karma Yogam? Which is better of the two? Arjuna wanted the best, actually. So Arjuna's question was, which one should I follow? Which is the best? Krishna says, karma yoga o vishishyade. Karma yoga means superior. Superior in the sense, Krishna says, the result is the same from karma sannyasam and karma yogam. But depending on the person who executes the system, it is based on him that which one is best is decided. In other words, Arjuna was qualified to execute karma yogam. Arjuna was not qualified to execute karma sannyasam. Karma sannyasam and karma yogam brings a person to the same point at the end. If one can execute karma sannyasam, it is fine, Arjuna, Krishna says. But Arjuna won't be able to execute karma sannyasam. That is the reason why Krishna said, karma yoga o vishishyadeem. Karma yoga means superior to, for, as far as the relationship with Arjuna. So, Krishna spoke in the fifth chapter, about karma yogam and karma sannyasam and spoke about the necessity to execute karma yogam. It was at the end of that, when karma yogam was completed, discussion was over, Krishna says at that time, when one who has followed these all chapters properly, one has understood that, and executed his karma yogam properly, what happens? He becomes qualified to go into the sixth chapter, which is called dhyana yogam. So, dhyana yogam is the sixth chapter. One person is only qualified for dhyana yogam when he has gone through this karma yogam properly. And if he has gone through karma yogam properly, in the sixth chapter, he becomes qualified to focus his mind on Krishna and engage in meditation of Krishna's form, beautiful form within his mind. He will be purified enough to see the beautiful form of Krishna within his own heart, and he can meditate on that form. That is why the sixth chapter refers to dhyana yogam or the meditation of Krishna. And at the end of sixth chapter, when the sixth chapter was spoken, Arjuna says to Krishna, I can't do this, he says. Krishna knew, yes, obviously you can't do it. It's the same situation as all of us. We can read all these chapters, but when it comes to doing it, that's another story. So here, Arjuna also said to Krishna, that how can I do this? This is impossible for me. From beginning to end, Arjuna is always mentioning very honestly to Krishna that something I cannot do. It was then that Krishna says to Arjuna that the result of karma yogam, Krishna, the result of dhyana yogam or the meditation process is this, that when one has executed the dhyana yogam process very well, then naturally he will what is known as jnanam and vijnanam in him. He will develop jnana vijnanam. That is why the seventh chapter is referred to as the knowledge of the absolute. But the Sanskrit title for that is jnana vijnana yogam. Both the person will have jnanam as well as vijnanam. So you can see how difficult it is that in order to have knowledge and also to have the practical realization of that. That is vijnanam. Vijnanam means the practical realization of the knowledge. So jnanam and vijnanam will sprout in a person when one has purified up to this extent, up to the end of dhyana yogam. And that is when one gets qualified for jnanam and vijnanam, knowledge and the practical application of that. So that is why in the seventh chapter, Krishna has discussed this particular topic called jnana vijnana yogam. And at the end of that seventh chapter, Krishna speaks about adhibhutam, adhidevam and adhiyajnam. This we have discussed before, what they are. And that relationship with Brahman, Krishna spoke about that. Arjuna wanted to know. And that is why in the 8th chapter, Krishna brought in the Akshara Brahma Yogam or Taraga Brahma Yogam or Pranava Upasana. Different names are given to that by different people. But in substance, it is the same. Some people call it as Taraga Brahma Upasana. Some people call it as Akshara Brahma Upasana. Some people call it as Pranava Upasana. Pranava means Om, the letter Om. How the letter Om is related, connected with Brahman. And through the following this process of practicing Om, chanting the letter Om, and through that Akshara Brahma Upasana, how one can realize oneself. That is what is discussed in the 8th chapter. So, when that 8th chapter was discussed, at the end of 8th chapter, Arjuna had enough things by now on his table. And he did not know which way to go. So it was then that Krishna told him a very important point at the end of 8th chapter. What did Krishna say? Krishna says there that Krishna says at the end of 8th chapter, Vedeshu yajnyeshu tapasu jaiva daneshu yal punyaphalam pradishtam അത്യേവ്യ തത്സർവമിതം വിദിത്വ യോഗി പരം സ്ഥാനം ഉപൈതി ചാദ്യം വേദം വേദേഷു യജ്ഞേഷു തപസ്സു ചെയ്യുക ദാനേഷു യൽ പുണ്യഫലം പ്രതിഷ്ഠം. ഓൾ ദീസ് തിങ്സ് വേദം യജ്ഞം ദാനം ഓൾ ദി പൈസ് ആക്ടിവിറ്റീസ് വൺ പെർഫോംസ് യോഗം എവറിഥിങ് അത്യേതി തത്സർവമിതം വിദിത്വ യോഗി പരം സ്ഥാനം ഉപൈതി ചാദ്യം. എ ഡിവോട്ടി will not have to go through this all these things to such an extent rather he can cross over them. He doesn't reject them, he goes above them, he cross over them by becoming a devotee. That is what Krishna said at the end of the end of 8th chapter. So naturally Krishna was preparing Arjuna for devotion, Krishna consciousness, and that is why this 9th chapter is important. 9th chapter is about Krishna consciousness. When we discussed 8th chapter, we saw the two important things mentioned there, Uttarayanam and Dakshinayanam. In relationship with that, we talked about Bhishma Stuti, Bhishma's prayers in the Bhagavatam. Bhishma, how he was preparing to leave the body by through the Uttarayanam time. And how the great yogis prepare themselves. And that Uttarayanam, Dakshinayanam was only with reference to the yogis, not for the jnanis or for the devotees. They are not bound by those rules. So Bhishma, who was a jnani as well as a yogi, as well as a devotee, he was everything. So Bhishma Pitamaha decided to use that Uttarayanam process and leave the world. And that is why we discussed Bhishma Stuti at that time. And then in the 9th chapter, when we came to the devotion, Krishna consciousness, the best example from the Srimad Bhagavatam, how beautifully it has been explained by Lord Brahma, therefore we discussed Brahma Stuti, Brahma's prayers to Krishna. After he was punished by Krishna, when he came to his own senses, he spoke with full knowledge what he had to speak to Krishna. And Bhakti Jnana Vairagyam, all three things were covered in Brahma Stuti very well. And therefore Brahma Stuti is very relevant to this 9th chapter. But this 9th chapter is very, very difficult also to fully understand. We'll go, when we go further, you will see how difficult it is to comprehend the principles what Krishna has spoken there. So, because our realizations are very limited and we are just started in our ABC or spiritual life, ABC or spiritual life. Therefore, there are many things in the Bhagavad Gita which are sometimes very difficult to digest into our own way of mind, our thoughts. And therefore, constantly one has to remember this. The whole 9th chapter, Krishna spoke about Krishna consciousness, pure devotion to Krishna. Krishna talks about pure devotion, not about the devotion with material desires. That's not discussed in the Bhagavad Gita anywhere. That is not a topic at all, because Bhagavad Gita is a spiritual text. It only talks about how to release oneself from the cycle of birth and death. So at the end of 9th chapter, when Krishna spoke about the devotional process of Krishna consciousness, Arjuna wanted to know how to develop this devotion. How can I become a devotee? Arjuna was curious to know. And therefore, Krishna decided to explain to him how to first start with, where to start with. And that is why Krishna says to Arjuna, first see me in everything in this world. Not everything, everything in the sense, in anything and everything in this world, wherever you find something very particularly spectacular or something which you cannot imagine in a normal situation, where you find something very extraordinary, see me there, Krishna says to Arjuna. See me there when there is something extraordinary in everything in this world. So therefore, what is called as Krishna's opulences is discussed there. The opulence of the Absolute, that is what it is titled. Vibhuti Yogam. Vibhuti means Krishna's Vibhutis. How Krishna is present in this world, in different places, in different conditions, under different and different species, Krishna is present in some form or the other. And Krishna says to Arjuna, know my Vibhutis first, know my opulences first. When you know my opulences, naturally you will see me in a different angle. At the moment you are seeing me driving your chariot, sitting here in the chariot. But that is not my true form. It's not everything in my actual form, is something more than that. And that is why Krishna spoke about the opulences to Arjuna. When Arjuna heard the opulences, which is the 10th chapter, Arjuna was so amazed, he wanted to see it. So because Arjuna wanted to see it, Krishna decided to show him. And that is why the universal form was shown in the 11th chapter. So the universal form was shown to Arjuna. after he heard the vibhudis, opulences in the 10th chapter. And when he saw everything, whatever, because otherwise Krishna thought, I've spoken all these things to Arjuna, does he trust me? What is what I'm saying to him? So maybe as well I may show it to him, so that let these doubts go once for all from his mind. How compassionate Krishna is when he wants to take one back home back to Krishna. He will offer everything, every help to the devotee if he wants to go back to him. Only thing, the desire has to be there to go back to him. When we have no desire, not much help also comes from there. When there is a lot of desire, a lot of help also comes from there. This is how it works. It is no, when we have full of material desires and we use Krishna for fulfilling all the material desires, then there may not much help coming from that side. But when there is a lot of spiritual desire and wants to give up all the material activities and go back to Krishna, then you will see how Krishna comes forward and offers all the help what a devotee require. And that is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita and beauty of Ekadasham also in the Bhagavadam. So here you will find in the 11th chapter, Krishna decided to show Arjuna, because by nature Arjuna was a great devotee, and also he was, not because of anything else, being the son of Kunti Devi. That was Arjuna's qualification. Kunti Devi's devotion was so superb that Krishna cannot write off Arjuna like that. Even if Arjuna has offended Krishna, hey Krishna, hey Yadava, hey Sakhedi, many instances Arjuna thought Krishna is my friend and Krishna is just a friend. Hey Yadava, hey Krishna, hey Sakhedi, in different ways Arjuna addressed Krishna. But now you will see in the Bhagavad Gita that in spite of all that, Krishna was more compassionate to Arjuna because of being the son of Kunti Devi. Kunti Devi, that mother's devotion that moved Krishna so much that Krishna could not refrain from helping Arjuna in that way. So 11th chapter was spoken, which is known as Vishwarupa Darshana Yogam. And at the end of Vishwarupa Darshana Yogam, or the universal form, Krishna says to Arjuna, Bhaktya to nanvaya shakya aham evam vidorjuna nyadum drishtam jadatvena praveshtanja parandava malkarmagalam alparamo malbhakta sangavarjida nurvaira sarvabhudesho yasamamedi pandava. Then Krishna says to Arjuna, if you want to see me like this, you have to become a devotee. Only devotees can see that form of Krishna. Krishna says to Arjuna, Mal karma krita mal paramo mal bhakta sangavarjidah, that you have to give up the association. Sangavarjidam, sangha means material association, has to be given up. Mal bhakta sangavarjida, then nurvaira sarva bhudeshu, free from any kind of vairam or enmity towards other living entities, and then you can understand Krishna consciousness and can see me in that form. So when the 11th chapter was concluded like that, Krishna understood that Arjuna is much more eager to hear now what is bhakti. What is bhakti he wanted to hear? And that is why the whole 12th chapter is Bhakti Yoga. It is one of the most beautiful chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, where particularly devotees should reflect on that chapter very seriously, because lot of misunderstanding comes to us in the name of devotion. What is devotion? Somebody says something, somebody else says something else. But it is better to hear from Krishna. Because Krishna says what is devotion in that chapter. And when we understand what Krishna's instructions are in the 12th chapter, then you will see Krishna consciousness from a different angle altogether. And that is why that 12th chapter is purely about Krishna consciousness. Lot of misunderstanding what we have will be cleared up in that 12th chapter. So you can see from chapter 1 to chapter 12 how Bhagavad Gita has progressed. How Bhagavad Gita has progressed. And if one can remember this flow of Bhagavad Gita, it will help a lot, because by the time we get from 13 to 18, we will also see the continuity in that those chapters also. And when we finish the 18 chapters, you will realize that whole of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken in a very methodical and systematic way, knowing very well, all of us, what kind of mind we have and what kind of thoughts goes through our head. So that is why Bhagavad Gita, you cannot study one chapter here, one verse there. It has to be a continuous flow. And all the time, we should not forget the previous chapters when we go to the future chapters. We should not forget that those what we understood in the earlier, because that has a relationship with the future chapters. And as you go further and further, you will see the whole thing gets clearer. And we understand that Bhagavad Gita makes sense at the end. Up to that time we are thinking, Bhagavad Gita makes no sense to us. Something one Krishna says something here, Arjuna says something else, and then we think something else. Neither Krishna and we don't understand neither Krishna nor Arjuna. Then we are in complete, it's totally mystic for us. And we keep looking page after page. After that we get tired and we leave it there. So this is what happens to many instances. That is why it's so important to know how that flow in the Bhagavad Gita is. This is one thing. Secondly, Bhagavad Gita has a relationship with us. I mentioned this from the very beginning. Bhagavad Gita is nothing but knowledge in the Upanishads. Krishna has taken out from Upanishads and put it together. That's all. The Upanishad's knowledge is in the Bhagavad Gita. Kathopanishad, Kenopanishad, all the Upanishads, the essence is in the Bhagavad Gita. So, just like in Kathopanishad, when it was spoken, that the material body is nothing but a chariot. This is a chariot. The body is a chariot. And the passenger in the chariot is the soul, the living entity. If we don't understand this relationship between Bhagavad Gita and us, we might wonder, what do we have got to do with Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken 5,000 years ago in the battlefield for Arjuna. But we would probably think that Arjuna was a devotee, he needed Bhagavad Gita. What do I need Bhagavad Gita for? That will be, I'm not going to fight a war in Kurukshetram, nor I have anything to do in this world. I just see, okay, it's another historical text. It's very nice, Arjuna, Krishna has spoken. And then people even find fault with Krishna for speaking Bhagavad Gita also. There are people in this world, they think Krishna is a warmonger. He was only whipping up to Arjuna to fight the war, and he has caused the... And the more interesting thing than that is, throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about ahimsa, non-violence. And people have come to so many strange conclusions from Bhagavad Gita. They are saying that on one hand Krishna is talking about non-violence in the Bhagavad Gita. On the other hand, he is saying, Arjuna, take the weapon and fight now. Where is the bow and arrow, he says. So these kind of conclusions can come when one do not understand everything in its proper perspective. And we have to know why Krishna has spoken so many different things and in what circumstances, the context it was spoken. And when everything is understood properly, Bhagavad Gita is no more a mystery. Bhagavad Gita is a much more enjoyable test. And not only enjoyable, once Bhagavad Gita goes in, there are so many other things will open up for us in our own mind, our own life also. So the 12th chapter is important like that. After that, we will come to the 6th later. But the important thing to remember here is, the chariot is the body, the chariot is the body, the passenger is the soul. And then we have got the five senses, which are the five horses, the five senses which are driving us in five different directions. The rein of these horses is the mind. And Krishna is seated within the heart as the controller of our intelligence. So the moment we hand over intelligence to Krishna, in other words, hand over our intelligence to Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. When we say Krishna, it means Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna drives the chariot or through the Buddhisthaniyan, it is called Buddhisthaniyan, he is situated in the position of the intelligence. When Krishna is driving the chariot will reach the correct destination. The moment we take the charioteer from there and we start driving the chariot, it will go in all directions and it will topple and it will completely collapse. And that's what happens to all of us. And when that happens, what will be the result? Result will be, once the chariot is toppled, you have to get another chariot, which means another body prepared for us by Krishna's arrangement. So that's why it's so important to study Bhagavad Gita properly and understand a very clear concept of what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. And the more and more when you apply that on your own personal life, you will see how important it is, Bhagavad Gita, from every angle. From every angle. As far as spiritual life is concerned, Prabhupada used to say that this is the ABC of the spiritual knowledge. ABC spiritual knowledge. Why did all the great acharyas take Bhagavad Gita to comment? Apart from the Prasthanatrayam. Prasthanatrayam means the acharyas have a system. All the great traditions in the Vedic tradition, all the great acharyas have a system. The system is, they have picked Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutram and the major Dashopanishads, the 10 Upanishads. And commenting on the Upanishads, commenting on Brahma Sutram and commenting on Bhagavad Gita, they have established their philosophical system. Advaitam, Dvaitam, Vishishta Dvaitam and Kevala Dvaitam. All of them comes from these three different texts. Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutram and Upanishads. And out of that, Bhagavad Gita has a place, important role there. So you can see even the great authorities on the Vedic tradition, all the acharyas, they have taken Bhagavad Gita as a most authentic text as far as the Vedic philosophy is concerned. So it is from all point of view, you can see, important to know Bhagavad Gita very well, as best as one can. And that will give the answer to all the questions in spiritual life. These doubts keeps coming to us, and people gets confused in different ways. In this world, particularly in the modern world, people, not so many people following the Vedic tradition, who have brought in different kinds of religious understanding. They try to argue and bring forward different arguments to prove that their philosophy and their religion is superior. And that is quite common in this world. They establish their religious principles, what suits them. But Vedic philosophy says, no, that is not the system. System is knowledge, to start with spiritual knowledge. And spiritual knowledge begins with Bhagavad Gita. So that's why Bhagavad Gita is so important. And when one is clear with Bhagavad Gita, then one can answer all such questions from various philosophical angles. So, now we'll go back to the chapter 9, where we have stopped last time at Mayatadamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matstani sarvabhudani najaham teshu avastidaha. Krishna said there that this whole many verses from now is very confusing. I will try to explain as best as I can, but if you have understood, it's fine. If you have not understood, just leave it. That's what I can say. Because it is so difficult to explain that. Because to understand it is very hard. Mayadadamidam sarvam jagad avyaktamurtina matstani sarvabhudani najaham teshu avastidaha. That Krishna says, everything is according to my desire, it functioning. But I am not seen anywhere. Jagat avyaktamurtina, I am not present in anything. Avyaktamurtina. I am present in everything, Krishna says in the next line. Matstani sarvabhudani. I am present in every living entity. Na jaham teshu avastidaha. But I am not there. This is how that fourth verse begins with. So, that is where we talked about the one interesting thing that I was explaining last time, that the story of the snake and the rope. The snake and the rope we discussed, if you remember. From there you can get a feel for that verse. What it means is that when someone saw the rope, he has took it as a snake. The rope is not a snake. The rope is lying there as the rope only. But this thought of snake has developed. Sarpa Brandhi. It is called Brandhi. Brandhi means the fear from which that consciousness has come in his mind. I thought myself that is a snake. I'm convinced on that. And based on that, my reactions in me. The snake is not in the rope, but I have taken it has the snake within me. The snake is within me, not in the rope. You have to remember that. Snake is within me, not in the rope. But similarly, Krishna is saying here, Matstani sarvabhudani nachaham teshu avastidaha. That I am in this world, but you are not seeing me actually. Rather, we are mistakenly seeing this the jagat as what we see with our eyes, our senses, what we perceive. We think this as the reality. This is our difficulty. That everything what we see in this world, with our gross senses, we take it as the truth. Is it not? We think this material world exists, and this material world is the reality. It's the truth. And in that perception, we carry on doing different things in this world. We don't see Krishna in this world at any time. At any time, we don't see Krishna in this world. So somehow or the other, just like in that case where we have superimposed a snake on the rope, we have superimposed this material creation on Krishna. And we are not able to see Krishna, rather we are seeing the material world. And when we have taken out the sarpa brandhi means the fear of that snake, from our mind, we took it away, we got it out from our mind, then the rope is seen in its true form, isn't it? We see the rope as it is, we see the rope. Similarly, when this Brahmi of this material world, as it is what we are seeing with our senses, when that perception has gone away, we will see Krishna in this place. We will see Krishna there. At the moment we are not seeing Krishna due to our strong conditioning. That's what's happening. Due to our strong conditioning, under the three modes of material nature, we have come to all wrong conclusions. And we have taken all this as absolute and truth. Everything we think, job is important, and family is important, and our social life is important. Everything is important. Why? Because falsely we have accepted all. The Jagadavyakta Murtina, Krishna says, Valstani Sarvabhudani Nachaham Teshu Avastidaha. I am in every living entity, Krishna says. But I am not in there. I am not in there. I am in everyone, but I am not there. That's how Krishna puts it there. So from this fourth verse, we'll continue. And there's so many verses in this similar way, which is built up. So, after this was spoken, Krishna says there, that in the verse 5, that Krishna says there, Najamalstani bhudani pashyami yoga maishwaram bhuda brahmija bhudasto mamalpa bhuda bhavanaha. That Najamalstani bhudani pashyami yoga maishwaram. The way Krishna presents to Arjuna is that I am present here, it's only me present in this creation. That's the first thing. And you see my opulences, Krishna says to Arjuna. Najamalstani bhudani pashyame yoga maishwaram bhuda bhranaja bhudasto amalpa bhuda bhavanam. All these living entities, they are within me, but I'm not in them. You see, they are within me, but I am not in them. Actually, this whole ninth chapter, when one start doing, reflecting on that, mananam process, once you start on that, it will completely shake you. The whole thing. You know, just like when they install this marquee and all the pandals and all that, when they put the post on, the post, in order to get the post very stable, they will shake it, isn't it? And then adding more and more mud and stones, and to get it strong, they'll keep shaking that. So this ninth chapter is just like that, is shaking the person completely. And when you understand that shaking, and when you understand what Krishna has spoken there, it becomes a little bit easier to understand. As I mentioned, Najamalstani Bhudani Pashyame Yoga Maishwaram Bhuda Bhranaja Bhudasto Mamalpa Bhuda Bhavanam. That all the living entities are within me, Krishna says. That and you have to understand, Krishna says to Arjuna, that how I am joined to them, but at the same time separated from them. You have to know that, Krishna says. I am within them, but at the same time I am separate from them. That you have to know, Krishna says to Arjuna. Krishna says there, that that once you understand that, how I am separate from them, at the same time I control them. All the living entities, I control them. That's why, Bhuda Brahmaja Bhudasto Mama Alma Bhuda Bhavanam. This, if you know that, Krishna says, how I am situated in them, I control them, but I am not in them. It's a very special relationship what Krishna has got with the living entities. We all wonder, that is why we keep asking this question. We still have doubt, is Krishna there within us? Isn't it? We keep asking that question. But if Krishna was there, why did he allow me to do some nonsense, what I wanted to do? People ask all kinds of questions like this. They try to see from a different angle. We have to look through the way Krishna has put it. Krishna is saying there, I am in everyone and I control them. Bhuda Brahmaja Bhudasto Mama Alma Bhuda Bhavanam. In every living entity I am there. But I am not joined to them. I'm not joined to them. So therefore, that connection between Krishna and the living entity is a very special connection it is. It is difficult to understand how that relationship between Krishna and the living entities. So Krishna says there that how I am separated from them, although I am joined to them, how I am separated from that you have to know. Arjuna did not understand anything at this point. Up to this point, Arjuna says, I cannot understand what you are saying. It is so difficult, he says. Krishna says, yes, it is difficult. So, in the sixth verse, Krishna will say, in a different way, Krishna is trying to get the point across. Yadhakashastito nityam vayu sarvatrago mahan tatha sarvani bhudani malstani upadarayam. Very important verse. Yadhakashastito nityam vayu sarvatrago mahan. Krishna says, think about me like the sky, the space. Isn't it? Here, the sky means not the sky what we see. That's not the sky. Sky means the space. The whole space is Krishna. And within that space, Krishna says, Yatha Akashastito Nityam Vayu Sarvatra Go Mahan. Sarvada. Sarvada means this Vayu is a very dear word for Krishna. Throughout Bhagavad Gita you will find in different instances Krishna bringing Vayu. Vayu is the air in. This material element air is very dear to Krishna. Not only material element, air, all the other material elements also. If you look at different material elements, you will see a beautiful relationship between Krishna and the material elements. I don't know whether you have thought about this. For example, Mother Earth is Vishnu's wife, isn't it? Vishnu's wife is Bhumi Devi. Bhumi Devi. Shri Dhara Shlishta Parshvam. Shri and Dhara. Dhara is Bhumi Devi. Bhumi Devi is one of Vishnu's wives. Shri, Mahalakshmi is one side and holding both sides. One side Shri and the other one Dhara. Mahavishnu stands like that. So, Shri Dhara Shlishta Parshvam. So, Mahavishnu has Bhumi Devi as his wife. Then, take for fire example. Fire is another material element, isn't it? What does fire does? Through fire, Krishna eats all the food that's offered, isn't it? All the sacrifices goes through fire. Fire, demigod fire, he carries everything to the demigods, and through them to Krishna. Krishna eats through two ways. One through the brahmanas and through the fire. That is the two faces of Krishna through which he eats. So, like this, material element, Bhumi has a, earth has a relationship, fire has a relationship. Now, what about water? Lies in the water comfortably. In the casual ocean, Mahavishnu lies there in the Karanadakshaya. Vishnu is lying there in Karanajalam. Isn't it? So it lies in the water. So water, fire, and earth. Now Krishna says air. Air, Krishna talks about air throughout Bhagavad Gita. In many instances you will find Krishna talks about air. Earlier, if you remember, when Dhyana Yoga was discussed, if you remember, there was a verse there in the Dhyana Yoga. That verse, Krishna says that, Arjuna says to Krishna that it is difficult for me to understand the power of this the Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana process is so difficult for me. And at that time, he says, Vayo Iriva Sudushkaram, that is how the word was used. How difficult it is to control the air. Air, when it is not controlled, what happens is, the air is all over, isn't it? All over the space it takes, throughout the sky, which is Krishna. Krishna says, considers himself to be the sky. And in this whole thing called space, it's filled with air. But there are places where air is not there. For example, if you go to wells which are very, very deep, air doesn't move in there. Air stays away from there. So air has its own peculiar characteristics where it exhibits its own way it functions everywhere. You can control the air, and if you can control the air properly, then air can do very powerful things also. Just imagine like in the tube and tires, in the automobiles, in the huge heavy trucks, they carry, because you manage to control the air within the tires or in the tubes. So they carry very, very heavy weights, 40 tons, 50 tons, 60 tons they can even carry. So much heavy weight they are able to carry. So the power of air is very, very strong, as long as one knows how to control the air properly. Vayo riva khanavali. And this air moves the clouds in the sky all around, isn't it? And whatever happens to the air, it doesn't affect the sky, does it? Because the air can be a good smell or a bad smell, depending on whatever you have polluted the air with. If you have polluted it with all the exhaust fumes and smoke, everything, it will have one smell. If you have grown plenty of flowers and beautiful roses, the air from there will have a different smell. So Krishna is saying here, in this chapter, in this particular verse, I am like the sky, and all the living entities are like this air. They are present in the air. They are just like the air. They are moving around everywhere. they pollute the air, they purify the air in different ways through their different activities. But no matter what is done, I am not affected. I am like the sky, holding everything together still. The sky holds everything together, isn't it? The sky is the coverage of the shell of this whole thing. Within that, the space, this whole activities are going on. So Krishna is saying here, Yathaga shastido nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tatha sarvani bhudani malstani dubadharayam. Then the nature of the sky is to provide space for everyone. To provide space for everyone within the sky. And that once you know this, the relationship between Krishna, the sky, and the air, the living entities, and different clouds in the air, like the different living entities in different forms, then one will know what our relation, what, how Krishna is present within us. Krishna is present within us, the space is present within us also, isn't it? The space is earth, water, air, ether, and fire. So the ether is present within us, the sky is present within us, and he is present outside also. So Krishna is present everywhere, but Krishna is not affected by anything, any of these things. That is how Krishna's relationship with us is. So this can cause a little bit, sometimes confusion, to understand how the system works. If it is like this, the system does work, we know that it works, isn't it? So sometimes when we discuss these topics, the questions will come that is it not very confusing? The other day when somebody was asking me the same question, they were asking, saying the question was like this, that one side Krishna is saying that if we execute spiritual life, and at the end Krishna says that even if you have fallen down from the spiritual life, there is no loss, isn't it? Krishna says like that, there is no loss, because you'll continue from there in your next life. On another instance, Krishna says that if one has not taken to spiritual life, and if he has fallen down from, if he has engaged in sinful activities, and the reactions, life after life, I'll push him into hellish conditions. Like that, Krishna mentioned two different things in two different places. Now, the question will come, which way do we understand this? What is the relationship, correct relationship for us to understand between our activities and Krishna? Now the way to understand is this, that if one has understood Krishna consciousness, say for example he studied Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, and he has understood what Krishna consciousness is, and he has gone, taken that process seriously, he has taken the process very seriously, he has progressed on that for quite a long way, but due to some strong vasanas inside, or due to some prarabdham inside, karmam, whatever that is, he has decided to give it up. He has decided to give it up, and he has fallen down. He has given up everything. Given up complete spiritual life and gone away from that. That is one situation. That person, Krishna says, cannot be excused. Cannot be excused. That's Krishna's point. Krishna is saying like this, avidya and vidya. One person who has knowledge and who has understood the importance of Krishna consciousness, then if he leaves it and goes away, he has to be punished. According to Krishna's rule, he has to be punished. But on the other hand, a person who has never understood Krishna consciousness, a person who has never understood Krishna consciousness, and he has somehow or the other taken to the process without knowing about it, properly understanding it, he has taken to it. Because that always happens, isn't it? We consider so many people as devotees, but when you start looking through the Shastram only, you know who is a devotee and who is not a devotee. Actually, Krishna, in this ninth chapter, actually Krishna talks about only one type of devotee. That is pure devotee. That's what Krishna talks about. We read this ninth chapter, I think we belong to this category now. We will make all these conclusions. In fact, when we have not studied Bhagavad Gita and the commentary, we will get confused altogether, because all wrong things we will understand. Sridharajarya Swamiji, who wrote his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, when it comes to the third canto of Bhagavatam, he has given a very beautiful analysis of devotees, what devotees are like. He has classified, there are 81 types of devotees, he says. Plus one, he says. And that one is a pure devotee, who doesn't have to be classified. He is pure. In every angle, he is pure. And then who is this 81? That's more interesting to know. 81 devotees, they are more interesting, because you can judge yourself which of these 81 I am. It's better not we discuss it. I will tell you what they are, this 81 are. The sadhana process, what we have, this is Sri Raswami's commentary on the third canto of Bhagavatam. This sadhana process are nine, isn't it? Nine different processes are there, isn't it? Everybody knows. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. These are the nine processes of devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj has taught this in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to his friends there. So these nine processes exist. Nine processes of bhakti process exist. Now, majority of the people will take to one of these processes if he has come to Krishna consciousness, isn't it? He'll take to one of these processes seriously. Or maybe two or three he may execute. All nine, one may not be able to do it initially. But ultimately the goal is like Mahabali handed over everything to Krishna, it's all yours, here we go, handed over everything and left. That is the perfection. But in the early days, we don't have that understanding nor the purity in us. So we take to one or two of these nine processes. So when, if you decide that these nine agree that these nine processes exist, then let us analyze us in how we exist. We exist under the three modes of material nature, isn't it? Under three modes of material nature. And there is sattvagunam, rajogunam. There is sattvagunam, rajogunam and tamogunam. Three different modes of nature. Each of these modes has got three different qualities. Why one execute Krishna consciousness in the mode of ignorance? Why one execute Krishna consciousness in the mode of passion? And why one executes Krishna consciousness in the mode of goodness? What are they? Okay. For the person who is in the mode of ignorance, there are three things. What are they? Himsa, Dambham and Matsaryam. Himsa means he is by nature, he is very violent. Violent in the sense, it's not purely the violence what we talk about generally. Violence has a much broader conception. That we'll talk about it when we come to the 12th chapter. What exactly violence means. Violence generally we understand, say if I kill one ant or one rabbit or shoot a rabbit or whatever, we consider that's the only why. Everything else I am free from violence. That's how we understand. But that is not, from the Shastric point of view, violence is a different thing. So that violence what is spoken here is one in the tamogunam, in the mode of ignorance. Then the next one is dambham. Dambham means pride, false pride. False pride in a person. And then the third one, matsaryam. Matsaryam means I have to be always one up against the other. I have to compete with somebody even in devotional service. I'm better than you. To prove to Krishna that I'm better than you. So these three things exist in the tamogunam. In the tamogunam. Similarly, if you come to Rajogunam, again there are three more things. What are they? Bhogam, Kirti and Aishwaryam. In these three things exist in the Rajogunam. That means Aishwaryam means opulences. One likes to have very opulent Krishna consciousness. How is that possible? Opulent Krishna consciousness. Yes, it is possible. You will know. Krishna is only saying Patram Pushpam Bhalam Doyam, isn't it? But we make it so complicated with Krishna consciousness sometimes, that we think that Krishna must have all these things. And according to one's own capabilities, one decide what one wants to. And sometimes, that Rajogunam inside will influence that decision. Rajogunam inside will influence that decision. Why? Because through that process, it brings fame to that person. Kirti. Through Aishwaryam, through opulences, it brings kirti or famous or fame for the person. And sometimes else, you will also notice in spiritual life, some people use spiritual life for fame. That also happens, kirti. So there are ways and means, these things does affect a person in a very subtle level. that may not be noticed easily. One may think, oh, he is performing, he is a pure devotee, that is why he is doing all these things. But perhaps you may not know what is the underlying thoughts behind it. But Rajogunam is there means Bhogam, Kirti and Aishwaryam. Aishwaryam means opulence, Kirti means fame, and Bhogam means to enjoy Krishna consciousness through sense enjoyment. First class prasadam, right up to the nose, eating very well, telling everybody, I am enjoying my prasadam, I am eating very well, after all it is Krishna's prasadam, so why shouldn't I eat? And if I don't get proper prasadam, I am not happy about it. So that is a level of Krishna consciousness, that is one level, it is in the mode of passion. That is in the mode of passion. Now we come to the mode of goodness. In mode of goodness also there are three. What are they? The three things are, a person executes Krishna consciousness or bhakti sadhana in one of these three. One, either he wants to wipe out all his karmic reactions by engaging in Krishna consciousness, not to create any more karmams from the in future. So therefore he takes to Krishna consciousness. Thereby he doesn't want to generate any more karmam, because already due to his understanding from the shastram, he knows that karmam means bondage, more bodies and more suffering. So in order to escape from that once for all, he has determined and to execute karmam in such a way that no more, execute Krishna consciousness, one of these processes with that understanding, that freedom from karmam, not to create any more karmam. Secondly, he already know that he has karma bandhanam, he is in the bondage of karmam from previous activities. So for that reason also, he may execute in the mode of goodness. So either karmakshayam or karmabandhanam. Karmakshayam means to wipe out what's already there, created. Karmabandhanam means not to create any more. In either way you can take that. And thirdly, because he has studied shastram properly, shastra says that you have to serve Krishna. So these three things in the mode of goodness, and three things in the mode of passion, and three things in the mode of ignorance. So, three and three under each three modes. And nine processes. 9 times 3, 27. 9 times 3, 27. 9 times 3, 27. Add 3 times 27, 81. So, all of us, almost all of us, falls into this 81 category. Wherever we are, which we don't know that, you have to leave it yourself. Individually, we have to decide where we stand. Plus, Sri Rajari Swami says, there's one more. That's a pure devotee who has not anything to do with this, with these 81 types of businesses, what we do. That is why it is so important to know these things, because otherwise we misunderstand. We think we are all pure devotees, aren't we? We all are very convinced about that, about our purity. That we know where it will end, when it will, that purity will go. The way it has come, it will go also in the same way. So, but this pure devotee, what Krishna is talking about, and the devotee, what Krishna is talking about, being protected. All kinds of things. Ananyaschindayandomam yejana paribhasade teshaam nitya abhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. Krishna says there, I look after that devotee. And Krishna is talking about that devotee here. That one. In the Bhagavad Gita. It's not the other 81. What do? Sometimes we misunderstand things. We think, say something happened to us. And wrongly we judge things. Say train accident happened. All those who survived the train accident, sometimes without serious damage, they think Krishna has saved me. So if you accept that, you have to take it that Krishna has killed the rest, isn't it? Who got killed in the accident? They have been killed by Krishna. Actually, Krishna says, I don't save or I don't kill anybody. It is not me, I am doing anything. I am independent of all these things. The person's karma has manifested at that particular time, fructified in a particular way. We shouldn't link all these things with Krishna. Krishna is controlling everything from in a subtle way. For different reasons, Krishna provides punishes sometimes. And sometimes we mistakenly think that Krishna has punished me when something goes wrong. Sometimes we pray to Krishna for something, some material desires has come. If it matures or manifests or materializes, then we say that Krishna has done it for me. Or if it didn't happen, then we say Krishna didn't do it for me. But Krishna says, I have nothing to do with any of these things. It's all your own mental concoction, he says, that you have decided to link it to me, that I am the one who is doing it. But actually, if you at least acknowledge that when something does happen, our duty is first to acknowledge that it is Krishna has done that. We'll come to that later when we come to that verse. But here, coming to this verse alone, Yathagashastido Nityam Vayu Sarvatrago Mahant Yadha Sarvani Bhudani Palstani Ubhadarayam, that that the condition of the living entity, of the living entities, is just like this air within the space. Air within the space. Space is Krishna. Krishna is controlling everything from there. Sarva bhudani kaundeya prakritim yandimamigam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadau visrajamyaham. Now, in this verse, Krishna is saying, sarva bhudani kaundeya prakritim yandimamigam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadau visrajamyaham. We have to understand what Krishna means by this. Kalpakshaye punastani kalpadau visrajamyaham. Kalpam is a day of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma's day is called Kalpam. And at the end of days of Lord Brahma, what happens is pralayam. Devastation happens, isn't it? So, a day of Lord Brahma, which is in the samashti form, and our day is one day and one night in the same way, isn't it? That's called Veshti. Veshti means for the individual. Samashti means for the whole creation. That is how in the Shastram it's mentioned. Samashti is for the whole creation. Veshti is for the individual. Now, Krishna is saying here, in his Samashti form, that means in the whole creation, whole day of Lord Brahma, due to the Kalpam time, living entities are coming out and manifesting their own life and experiencing their own karmam, and they go through life after life in different bodies. They keep changing the bodies throughout that Kalpam time, the daytime. They change. Brahma's daytime. They change through that. Isn't it? As soon as the nighttime comes for Lord Brahma, when the nighttime comes, the creation is stopped there. Brahma goes to sleep for a whole another 12 hours. Just these 12 hours Brahma had, another 12 hours Brahma's night. At that time, in the Samashti, nothing is happening. Nothing is happening. Everyone has been pulled back. All of us go back to Brahma's body and stays there. And then when Brahma starts creation again in the next Kalpam, we come out. If you haven't made it up or way. But that itself is a long period of time, running to trillions of years. But here, in Veshti form within us, what's happening? What's happening is that throughout the day we are active, isn't it? Throughout the day we are active. And when we are active, we are engaged in so many activities. In the night time, what happens? Material world doesn't exist anymore for us, isn't it? That when you go to bed, what happens? The pranan, the life air within the body, it goes and dissolves itself in the mind. It dissolves in the mind. And then the mind goes and dissolves in the intelligence, and everything comes to a standstill. At that time, where is creation? Does creation exist at that time? Creation doesn't exist. Creation is finished here, within this, say, 12 or 14 hours. Some people make it the other way. They make the whole night, they do something, and the day they sleep. So that's a different story. We are talking about ordinary, normal people. When we say normal, who sleep, works during the day and sleeps at night. So during the time when you are awake, when we are awake, out of the three states of existence, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, the Jagrat states and the Swapnam states is the two states where one is aware of the creation. Where one is aware of the creation. And creation exists only at that time for that person. Otherwise it doesn't exist. Where is creation for him when he is in Sushupti, in deep sleep? What creation for him? It doesn't mean anything for him at that time. So many things are going on. It may be going on, may not be going on, but doesn't affect him. So therefore it has no significance for him. So just like Brahma is creating on a large scale throughout creation, we also create material world during the day, and in the night we go to sleep. We are also little Brahmas in that sense. Our own world we create, is it not? And this creating world is not a very special thing. If you really analyze it, all of us are creating our own world all the time, isn't it? All the time we are creating our own world. I can tell you so many examples. Say you have taken a lottery ticket. I don't know anybody takes lottery ticket. But say you have taken a lottery ticket. And it so happened, Saturday night, isn't it? And Wednesday, 2 days. The lottery numbers are drawn. And you're sitting in the television with your numbers in the hand. And it so happened, your numbers have come. All the numbers. You have won the jackpot. 20 million or 40 million, whatever it is. You got it. Immediately what's going to happen? You will create one world straight away. Another world, what I'm going to do with the money. Isn't it? The planning will straight away start. What to do with it now? So another world you have created straight away within your own mind. So this mind is such a powerful thing. It can create a new world all the time. And constantly it is creating in some world or the other. Constantly it's creating. And you are operating in that world for quite some time, depending on the type of world you have created. So this is the nature of the mind. Material nature is like that. If you know in the history, there is the story, Vishwamitra created one whole world for Trishango. If you remember in the 9th canto of Bhagavatam, we spoke about that. Vishwamitra created, Trishango was sent to the heavenly planets. Indra rejected him, sent him back. Vishwamitra said, no, I'm not accepting that. You go back, he said. So Trishango went up, Indra sent him back. So eventually Vishwamitra said to Trishango, if Indra is so obstinate, I'll create another complete planetary system, heavenly planets for you. And he created that for Trishango separately for him. In between the heavenly planets and the earthly planet. With all the opulences of the heavenly planets, Vishwamitra created one for him. That example is mentioned in the Bhagavatam and also in the Mahabharatam it's mentioned. So from here you can see creation is a process. And this creation process, as far as Krishna is concerned, Bhagavad Gita says it is like the spider. Have you seen the spider, how it creates its web, the spider's web? When you go with the broom to kill the spider, only then you will see how active he is. Just like the, sometimes in the circus, they do, the jokers, they come on the pole, right down, come down, sliding down. Similarly, this spider, the saliva from his mouth, I think the saliva of the spider, that's what the thread, what he uses for making that web. He makes the web, isn't it? He makes the spider's web, it's called. And after he has made that web, when he senses that there is a danger from someone, somebody's trying to kill him, what does he do? He pulls out all the web back to him and he goes away, runs away from there. All in a very split second he does that. So this saliva from him makes that spider's web. And Krishna's creation is like that. Krishna creates everything. And from him everything comes. And at the end everything comes back to him. Goes back to him. And only Krishna exists at the end. Nothing else exists. So Krishna's creation is such that the Urna Nabhi. Urna Nabhi is a word in Shastram for spider. So Urna Nabhi is a creation process. What Krishna says here in the next verse, Prakritim Swamavastabhya Visrajami Puna Puna Bhutagrami Mimam Krishnam Prakritam Avasham Prakrite Ruvashal. Then To Yeva Tulkritatum Shamayasi Jagadit Urna Nabhal Pratiyam. Then this Urna Nabhi nature of the living entity in that way to function as like Urna Nabhi is quite common. And it is the best example in the Shastram for creation. Spider creates and pulls back everything. The whole web backs into itself. Similarly, in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna's creation is similar. From Krishna everything comes and eventually Krishna pulls that back to himself. So, Prakritim Swamavastabhyam Visrajami Puna Puna Bhutagramam Imam Krishnam Visrajam Krishnam Avasham Prakriti Ervashal. That and this thing he repeats again. That's what Krishna says. That this process of creation, Krishna repeats again. Only thing is, it's over a very, very long span of time. This is happening. Over a very long span of time. Najamam tani karmani nibadhranti dhananjaya udasinavadasinam asaktam teshu karmaso. Now comes, Krishna says something else now. What does Krishna say? Krishna says then, Nabhadrandi dhananjaya udasinavadasinam asaktam teshu karmaso. Then Arjuna, even though I create all these things, even though I do all these things, I am completely indifferent to it. Nachamam tani karmani nibadhanti dhananjaya. Dhananjaya, he says to Arjuna. Arjuna, although I do all these things, this is a very important point in the Bhagavad Gita. Although I do all these things, I am not bound by any of them. You see, I am not in bondage. You see, when we do something, we are immediately in bondage, aren't we? That action will have a seed within us, vasana inside. And that will develop further karma and further bondage, further karma, further bondage. It goes on like that. Whereas Krishna says, Nachamam tani karmani nibadhanti dhananjaya. My karma never binds me, dhananjaya, he says to Arjuna. Udasinam adasinam. I am udasinan. Udasinan means indifferent to everything. And I am situated like that. I am doing everything, but I am not affected by anything of that. Asaktam teshu karmasu. My karma is such, I am not actually affected by any of this, what I am doing here. Otherwise, this is why it is Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is this, that he is not bound by anything. After the whole Mahabharata war was over, who was engineered by Krishna, and who was executed by Krishna from beginning to end, at the end he smiles and comes out from there. After killing 64 million people, Krishna comes out smiling, saying to the Pandavas, now let's go and rest now, the war is over, he says. And people think, after reading this, what kind of God is this, who is killed so many people, and then comes out and says, now let's go and relax. Only Krishna can do that. Why? Udasinam adasinam asaktam teshu karmasu. I have no bondage in any of these activities. That is the beauty of Krishna's position as a Supreme Personality. That you will see as you go further and further in this ninth chapter. So many features of Krishna. What differentiates Krishna from us. You will find it very interesting. Up to the point we are thinking, most of us are thinking, many of us think, Krishna, what is Krishna? Krishna is also lived here 5,000 years ago. Maybe he lived a little longer than us, 125 years. Where he has gone? What he is doing? Who knows? He says, we say Krishna is God. Some people say Krishna is not God. Some people say, but when you don't understand the subtleties of all these things in Bhagavad Gita, then you may mistake Krishna as an ordinary person. That is quite possible. Or someone will say, all what is Krishna's CV, if you look, it's not very good. The CV doesn't look very good. Who told this? You know about Krishna's CV? Krishna's CV, Shishuvala analyzed Krishna's CV. All in the younger, never went to school properly. All in the younger days, he was messing around with the gopis in Vrindavanam. And stealing from the very beginning. Stealing was the business, main business. One day they say, it became unbearable in Vrindavanam. So when they found Akura had come, they all told Akura, please take him and get him onto the other side of Yamuna river so he won't come back again. Because they were so fed up with Krishna that he was stealing everyone's butter, milk, and poor gopis, they were crying all the time because of this. That they all requested Akura. Actually inside they were happy, it seems, Akura has taken him away and got him to the other side. Because you know in the country they do like that, isn't it? Sometimes cats and all, when they become too much, what they do, they take it to the other side of the river and leave it, so he won't come back. So similarly, what Krishna has done is that Krishna's CV is such that he has been a nuisance in Vrindavanam. Then he went to Mathura. The situation is not much different. And then when he came to Dwaraka, it is worse, that after he took over in Dwaraka, Krishna had married 16,100 wives. And this has upset all the royal families at that time. All the princes, if they wanted a prince, all the princes, when they wanted to marry someone, no princesses were available. Everyone was taken to Dwaraka. So, if you look at CV of Krishna, it's not very interesting. So, therefore, Krishna is saying here that the beauty of, when you understand Krishna in that way, you will get misled. But if you understand Krishna from Bhagavad Gita, then you will know what is Krishna. Nachamam dhani karmani nibadhanti dhananjaya udasina vadasinam asaktam teshu karmasu. Teshu karmasu. That this is what is expected from us. That we have to know this to become like Krishna's understanding of karma. That not being affected by any karma in this world, by able to separate oneself from one's own karma. How that can be done? That is why Karma Yoga was spoken in the beginning. That pure and perfection in Karma Yoga, that was the, Krishna was the embodiment of that. And that is why Krishna was able to do so many things in this world. His Rajasuyam sacrifices and all the other pastimes in this world, never you will find Krishna is bound anywhere. You see, Krishna was never bound to anything. Never once you will see Krishna was affected by the reaction of his karma at any time. Whether it was in the battlefield of Kurukshetram, or whether it was the Rajasuyam sacrifice, or even with the gopis, there was no karmam in their relationships because of that purity, in that pure Supreme Personality's position, that freedom from all karma. Therefore, anything what Krishna has done has not created any bondage for him. That is why Krishna is saying here also, this is how I run this creation, Krishna says. Nacha mam tani karmani nibhadranti dhananjaya udasinam adasinam. Udasinam, I am udasinam, I am indifferent to everything what goes on the creation, it doesn't affect me. Asaktam teshu karmasu. That is how I run this show. That is why Krishna is able to run this show. If Krishna is not, even Lord Brahma gets implicated, isn't it? Lord Brahma, after creation, what happened? Many times, Brahma started crying at the end. He himself got into difficulties because he realized that as long as there is attachment, you have to suffer. As long as there is attachment, you have to suffer. That doesn't matter whether it's Brahma or anybody. So Brahma asked this question to Krishna. All these living entities you are asking me to create, fine, I'll do that. But these living entities, they are suffering their karma. Is it not? Krishna says yes. But if I have created them and they are suffering because of their own karma, what do? They say to me, turn this around, why you have given this trouble to me? They blame me for that. I know pretty well that they have caused themselves their problems because they kept away from their spiritual position, they have fallen down into material platform. That is why karma begins at that time. So now they have implicated themselves in karma and they are blaming me. So will I have to suffer? Krishna says that you will have to suffer. That you can't escape from that. So every point Krishna will try to make this very clear, that the unless one understands this karma, the power of karma and the influence of karma on an individual's life, and free oneself from the reactions of karma, there is a possibility that one has to suffer the reactions of karma. And that goes for everything in this material world. So after saying this, immediately if you look into the next verse in the Bhagavad Gita, you will find a completely different picture Krishna presents. What does he say? Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyadesa characharam hedunanina kaundeya jagadvivari vartade. Everything Krishna says under my direction happens in this world. Just in the last verse, Krishna says, I am separate from everything. I have nothing to do with anything. Udasinam adasinam asaktam teshu karmasu. That was the last verse. Look at the next verse. Maya adhyakshena prakriti suyadesa characharam hedunanena kaundeya jagadvi parivartadeyam. That this Krishna, who is present, Krishna says, everything works under my direction. Adhyaksha. Is called Mayadhyakshena Prakriti. Material nature is working under my direction. So earlier in the last verse, you may wonder if he is indifferent to everything, how all these things are happening. That question will come, isn't it? How the creation is working then? So for that, the answer is in this verse. Mayadhyakshena Prakriti Adishada Aksham Iti Adhyaksha. That is how it says. That one who under whose supervision everything works, he is Adhyaksha. In all the big meetings, they will say this, isn't it? Adhyaksha, one who is controlling the meeting. So, Krishna says, it is under my direction. My adhyakshena prakriti, suyadesa characharam. Characharam, charam means which is moving. Acharam means what doesn't move. So, everything in this creation, in other words. Hedunanena kaundeya jagadvi parivartade. It all happens under my direction, Krishna says. Under my direction it's happening. How does it happen? I am present as adhyaksha. Material nature is present there. Material nature will continue functioning as long as it will execute its work, as long as I am present there. Only in my presence, material nature will execute the work. That is how the material nature functions. Material nature will function under my presence, in my adhyaksha. Maya adhyakshena prakriti suyadesa characharam hedunanena kaundeya jagadvi parivartade. So that is Krishna's answer to that. Then, due to my presence and by the transactions of the material nature, all these things are happening. For example, what do we do normally? We say, I am experiencing something, happiness, I am experiencing distress, I am hearing, I am eating, I am listening, I am walking, I am doing this, I am doing that. So many things we are able to do that. But in all these things, I have the understanding that I am doing this, isn't it? I am doing this, I am doing that, I am hearing, I am listening, I am this, me, I am. All this I am is doing. So, when you know who this I am within I am, what that I am is, that I am talking about, at the moment I am talking about that body, what I am talking about, but actually I am not that body. So, that I am, which is within me, who actually carrying out all these different things, that I am is a part and parcel of Krishna. You see, that is a part and parcel of Krishna. So, this I am, whom I have not understood so far, but when I understand who that I am is within this I am, which I am thinking who I am now. So, when I understand that I am, and that I am will understand the relationship. When I realize that I am, what I am that is, that I am's relationship with Krishna is understood, then you will understand this particular verse. Mayadhyakshena prakriti, because Krishna's part and parcel is us. The spirit soul is a part and parcel of Krishna, super soul. And there is a internal activity, internal transaction happening between the soul and the super soul. Is it not? Super soul is present within us and we are present also. And we are more connected with the super soul than with the material body. Material body is not our real identity. But today, in our false understanding, we are identifying with the material body and forgetting that relationship with the super soul, Krishna. So, as long as this identity as I am is with the material body, we will not understand that transaction going on between the soul and the super soul, individual soul and the super soul. But the moment we identify ourselves with that I am, the real I am, then I know, we know, that what that I am is doing in consultation with the super soul, Krishna there. So that is what the proper understanding. And then you will know that how its system is working. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyadesa characharam hedunaneva kaundeya jagadvi parivartadeyam. Then the best example is given like this, that the best example is like this, that we have, say for example, so many electrical or electronic gadgets. There is a mixie, there is a fridge, there is washing machine, there is cooker, there is electric iron and so many other electronic goods and electrical goods. All of them are working as long as electricity comes in, isn't it? Krishna is that electricity. Krishna is the electricity. When Krishna withdraws from that, any of these equipments also has no meaning unless there is electricity in there. But none of us see electricity, do we? We don't see electricity. Okay, we can measure it. Fortunately, it is a material thing, so we can measure it with gadgets and all that. But the spiritual electricity called Krishna, you can't do that. But in principle, the operation is very similar to that. Krishna functions through every living entity in different ways and different forms and different conditions. But at the same time, what's happening is like this. That the function is mayadhyakshena prakriti. That prakriti, material nature, under my guidance, is working like this. Suyadesa characharam, all the living entities, moving and non-moving. Hedunanena kaundeya jagadvi parivartade. And in that way, this jagat, this material universe, is constantly changing, one day to another. Constantly it is on its move, isn't it? Constantly changing, constantly bringing new, never in a never stable in one way, position. It's always constantly changing. Living entities are changing, different experiences, different activities. Similarly, even the non-moving things like the trees, the plants and the stones, everything, they are all changing Under what? Under the influence of this prakriti, material nature. That's what it says. Then, so, when one has realized this, due to reflecting on, in fact, every verse in this Bhagavad Gita, particularly this chapter, not only this chapter, actually the whole of Bhagavad Gita, requires a lot of reflection, constant reflection. And when one is constantly reflecting and thinking about it, when eventually one will come to this perfect understanding that nothing is happening without Krishna's sanction in this. Krishna is controlling everything so finely that our individual contribution to that is very, very little. Actually, we are also the tools of Krishna's hands. When one comes to that perfect understanding, and when one does not fall from that consciousness back again to the material consciousness, then he is a jnani. He has become a jnani. That is how the jnanis are. Jnanis realize this through this constantly reflecting on these verses in the Bhagavad Gita. By constantly reflecting these verses, jnanis come to that state of consciousness. They can come to that state of consciousness. And it is possible for anyone to some level to come to that by constantly analyzing these verses, Krishna's instructions very clearly, and thinking about it all the time, as best as one can. You'll come to some understanding of that. So, here, Krishna says there that all these things are working only because of presence of Krishna. Without Krishna's presence, this cannot happen. This is the consciousness we need to come to. That's the consciousness of a jnani who has come to that conclusion firmly. For at the moment, in our consciousness, we haven't got that concept that Krishna is actually, without Krishna's presence, all these things can happen. Because we don't see Krishna there. Anything. We don't see Krishna. We are thinking our planning goes on, our action, that is what is keeping this whole creation going. This is the foolishness of the living entity. The living entity is thinking it is his action and his activity that is determining the destiny of this creation. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because he himself is not very steady here. He has got 50, 60 years here. And then he is making the decision what the future will be of the whole population. And in the name of that illusion, we cheat each other. Politicians are cheating the public, saying them, if you vote for me, another 50 years guaranteed everything. He won't be there for more than 4 years. He's gone. And the next group comes in and he makes another set of false promises. Like this, all fooling each other. That is why this whole material world is so funny and interesting place to watch. How mutually everyone is so clever in trying to handle each other. But Krishna is saying, all these fools I'm managing. That is what more interesting in there. All these fools were fooling each other like this, day in and day out. Krishna says, they all come from me, they come back to me at the end. So imagine that situation. So a jnani, he will not be moved by all this political propaganda and all that, because he knows that this person who is giving this, making this propaganda, is primarily doing it for his own selfish reasons. He knows very well that he is not the controller of the destiny. Krishna is actually controlling everything to the finest degree. Krishna is controlling, but we cannot conceive that. We cannot perceive that in our mind. And therefore we are thinking like this. But if you study these verses in the Bhagavad Gita and you reflect on them in depth as best as one can, constantly chewing them again and again, one will see Krishna's presence in this world. That is what the jnanis do. And when one has realized that, he has become a jnani. He has become a jnani. So jnanam is not something what you learn from the book alone. Shastra will only tell you the principles. But jnanam, by intense cultivation of the knowledge, one has to, by practicing it under the instructions of a spiritual master, one will come to that perfection. And then he is situated in that platform. He will not be disturbed by that anymore. So, move on to verse 11. In the next verse, Krishna says something different. Avajanandima moodha manushim tanima shridam param bhavam ajanando mamabhuda maheshwaram. This is another important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. What is important is, avajanandima moodha manushim tanima shridam. People think about me when I come here. that I am one like them. They think about me like that. Avajanandi ma mudha manushim tanuva shridam. Mudha. Mudha means stupid, fool. He think about me, he is a foolish person. Why? Because they think I am like them. Like them. Oh, he was there in Vrindavan 5,000 years ago. Then he lived some time in Mathura. Then he went to Dwaraka and then he went left. But we have not seen him after that. That's what we say, isn't it? So this is mudha. Mudha means one who does not understand what Bhagavad-gita is saying. Krishna calls them mudha. That's the right word for that. Why it is the right word? Because if you understand these verses deeply in your heart, you cannot say anything else except that word, mudha. Avajanandi ma mudha manushim tanuma ashridam. Why? Parambhavam ajanando mamabhuda maheshwaram. They do not understand my transcendental nature, who I am. They don't understand. Now, Krishna is talking about on a completely different level. He's not talking, we are thinking Krishna is a person, one person in come and gone, like that. We don't see Krishna's opulences in this creation, how it is working. Whole creation is working under Krishna's direction. In the previous verse, Krishna has spoken that, my adhyakshena prakriti suyade sacharacharam hetunaneva kaundeya jagadviparivartade. It's only because that supreme consciousness of present there, Krishna's consciousness, that all these things are working in a way, in a systematic way. Prabhupada used to give the example how the seasons are changing in the who is controlling this? How the different seasons are coming one after the other? How all the planets are keeping up themselves in their right orbit? How do they move like this? Who is controlling them? Who is controlling them? And under whose direction everything is working? In the tiniest seed of the banyan tree, if you take the seed of banyan tree and if you look at it, in one small seed, there is another hundreds of seeds within that. And in that, each one seed is huge, banyan tree is packed up. Who has done this? Who has done this? Where is the difficulty in understanding the hands of Krishna, where it is working? From the little baby in the womb of the mother, when you see how when they have scanned the baby, how they look like that, inside, all squeezed up. And when you see that baby, after 15, 20 years, when he's standing there like a young man or a young girl, when you see that, what do you think about that at that time? Who changed him like this? How did that change happen to that body? That is what it is explained here. Avajanandi ma mudha manushim tanima shridam parambhava majanando mamabhuda maheshwaram. That Krishna's presence in everything is making this change to happen. This change is happening because of Krishna's presence within us. If Krishna is not present, Krishna says it will not happen. That is the beauty of Krishna's presence in a living entity. Whether one is an atheist, or one is a non-believer, or whatever you call it, whatever it is, Krishna still allows him to grow his body. He's growing, isn't he? He grows still. And all the bodily features develop, he becomes strong, he grows young, older, intelligent, wise, all develops, changes are happening in the subtle body, as well as in the gross body. So who is changing them? Who is changing them? Krishna is changing them. Krishna is present inside, he's changing them. That is why Krishna says, all these things are going on, and still they don't want to recognize me. They don't want to accept me. They are still thinking, oh, Krishna was like us, another person who lived 5,000 years ago and gone. That's why he calls this word mudha. Mudha means this lack of spiritual understanding of Krishna's presence in every living entity. When one does not understand and take that seriously, Krishna calls him a mudha. There is no other word substitute for that. Avajanandi ma mudha manushim tanuma shridam parambhava majanando mamabhuda maheshwaram. That's why Yanis will say like this, asangoham, asangoham, asangoham. I have nothing to do with matter, I have nothing to do with matter, I have nothing to do with matter. Nothing is not me. Then what is me? Sachidananda rooboham, eternal blissful and knowledge. That's my true identity. That's how they say. Yanis will say like this, asangoham, asangoham, asangoham. I have nothing to do with the matter. I am Sachidananda because I am a part and parcel of Krishna. So today, our realization is, I am matter, I am this body, I am beautiful, I am young, I am this, I am that, I am that. All these things will disappear when Sachidananda Rubaham, when I am realizing that I am Sachidananda. At that time, this illusion will go and our true identity will come. And then you will see that whatever relationship with Krishna is, that will come to that. So, actually, there are two things. One is called Swarupam and the other one is called Swabhavam. Swarupam means our true form, which is Sachidanandam. Swabhava means that what we have created, acquired from the modes of nature. Swarupam never changes. It's permanent as Sachidanandam, eternal, blissful and knowledge. That is our true nature. But Swabhavam will change. It'll come and go, come and go. Swarupam doesn't change. That's what we have to understand. Swarupam doesn't change. The form doesn't change. But the qualities, the Swabhavam or the character of the person or the habits or whatever that is, that continuously changes. That doesn't stay the same. That comes and goes. That's what Krishna is saying. Then, then verse 12. When one does not understand this, Krishna says. Now, it's all very nice in these verses how Krishna has spoken. It's very convincing also. But what do? As soon as we leave this place, we are back into square one again, isn't it? We're back into our old tricks again. We take back. So what was the use? That is why I was saying this ninth chapter is particularly very difficult. Very, very difficult. Because the truth is spoken. It's not very palatable. Why? Because we are anywhere near to the truth. On the other hand, we want to know the truth. At the same time, our practical situation is such that we are conditioned by the modes of nature. So Krishna is saying in the next verse, when one does not understand this and live accordingly, what will happen to that person? Mokhasha mokha karmanam mokha jnanam chedasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shridam. What will happen is mokhasha mokha karmanam, these are the things. Mokha jnanam vijayadasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shridaha. Very, very nicely Krishna has put it there. Mokhasha means all useless desires inside. Kinds of desires, yes, nishphalam. That means useless desires, plans he has made in his head. You see? Sometimes you see like that, isn't it? People, actually, it's a very deep subject, this whole thing. You know, because if you look into it and analyze it in depth, it opens up a lot of things, what goes on in this world today and in the past also and in the future also. Mokhasha mokha karmano mokha jnana vijayadasa. Majority of the world activity comes under this category. Mokhasham mokha karmanam mokha jnanam. What does mean is nishphala means useless desires inside. He knows that his desires will never be fulfilled. Yeah, those who are executing this kind of activity, they know very well that their desires will never be fulfilled, but still they will act. Have you noticed that in this world? Many, many, many people, many regimes in this world, many governments in this world, they all are belonging to this category. Mokhasha mokha karmana mokha jnana vichedasa. Why is it like that? Because Krishna says here, explanation is very good. Krishna says, their activities are all without any proper understanding of karma. Bhalashunya. Bhalashunya means there is no results they expect from that. You may wonder what does that mean, isn't it? Bhalashunyam. Karmam bhalashunyam. Bhalashunyam means no proper understanding of karmam nor the expectation of the results either. You see? And their knowledge also is like that. Mokha jnanam jayadasa. Knowledge is there, but it is not in line with the material nature. Material nature. It's not in line with the material nature. Let's take for example the 9-11. Let's say it's just an example. It is not to take sides with anyone, this or that. But what has happened has happened. But let's analyze it in this perspective of Bhagavad Gita. What Bhagavad Gita is saying is, if you look at the 9-11, the way it was executed with such a precision, how all these things were masterminded behind the scene by whoever has done that, and how they did this, which was beyond our imagination, that how could such a thing they could go and do that. Isn't it? Not from the point of view of killing so many people. That's not the issue I'm talking about. What we are saying is that how they planned so meticulously these things that they could go to the most powerful nation on the earth, take their own planes from there and drive through all these things with all the protection and safety systems they had. How they managed to do that and the brain behind it. Obviously you have to understand that a lot of thoughts have happened like that. Krishna is saying there that this is the type of activities they will perform because they will not look into the welfare of the human society, welfare of the living entities. They will act without knowing what they are doing, no complete ignorance. That is what it is spoken here. Mokhasha mokha karmano mokha jnana vijayadasa mokha jnanam. That is their knowledge is, has no relationship with the prakriti, material nature. Krishna said earlier, Arjuna, try to understand that material nature, you have to be in tune with material nature and work in this world. Otherwise you will go against me. I am controlling everything. And when a living entity decides to ignore that instructions of Krishna, all his activities will turn out to be like this. Mokhasha mokha karmano mokha jnana vichedasa. Then what will happen? Rakshasim asurim chaiva. Rakshasam and asuram. The karma will turn into that. Rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shridaha. That person will fall into the beauty of prakriti, mohini. Prakriti will become like a mohini for him at that time. He is thinking that I am succeeding in my business. That is what has prompted them all to do this, isn't it? But look at this. Krishna is saying to Arjuna that their activities will only lead them to disaster. Because if you understand the laws of karma, how the karma will come back in these situations. That is the way everything in this world, when you do not understand Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita about the karma and how everything is under the tight control of the material nature. The living entity's responsibility is to work along with the material nature, to accept everything as per the Bhagavad Gita's instructions and change the life. As long as it's not done, we have to pay the heavy price for it. We have to have the heavy price for it. So strictly speaking, what is required is the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita more than anything else. When there is enough knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, then such mentality may change in the living entity. Otherwise, by nature, we think we want to be the controllers in this creation. And we act in that level. Isn't it? We act in that level. So, mokhasha mokha karmanam mokha jnana vichedasa rakshasimasurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shradaha. Because the consciousness is not pure, they haven't got the pure understanding of the material nature from the Bhagavad Gita. So, this you can see, this mentality is not very difficult to explain. You can see so many times in your own life you will see the drishti or one's vision will decide how he sees things, isn't it? Just I mentioned in the Bhagavatam before, we talked about this, drishti srishti vadam it's called. That means according to how you see things, according to your mentality, you will see things, a particular thing. Once, I was traveling by train and it was very interesting to see this incident. While traveling in the train, somewhere there was a beautiful lake not far from the rail track. And there were a family sitting there opposite, and there was one person sitting next to me, and they were all looking through the window, and suddenly when they saw this beautiful lake near the railway track, a group of birds came flying in. And these birds you will see particularly in the summertime when there's lots of birds, they come flying in and they just land on the water in a like a group of aircraft landing. They come and land in a very beautiful way, they come down. So one little boy from the family who were there, he started calling his dad and telling him, look at this dad, how they come and land, these birds, they come and land. He was finding a lot of beauty in that. He found it very beautiful. But the person who was sitting next to me, you know what his remark was? He was saying, if only I had a gun, he says. So two people saw the same thing. One person saw a beautiful landing of these birds. He was finding a happiness in that beauty. And the other person, he was saying, oh, this was the right time to have a gun. So that I could have gone back with a few kilos of the birds, the meat. So the same thing, two people are seeing two different things. That is how it is. In this world, everything in the material nature is also like that. Different people see things in a different way, according to their modes of nature. So that's what Krishna is talking about here. That in the Vedic system, this killing business is not the answer to everything. Killing is not the solution also. Therefore, if you will find in the Bhagavad Gita, earlier when we discussed about Karma Yoga, that was in the third chapter, I think. In third chapter, 10th verse. What, if you remember that verse, Sahayatnya Praja Srishta Puryo Vaja Prajabadi, that verse. 3:10. Sahayatnya Praja Srishta Puryo Vaja Prajabadi Anena Prasavishadvam Esha Vostishta Kamadhuk. Krishna made it very clear what is on offer. He says, Sahayatnya Praja Srishta Puryo Vaja Prajabadi. The living entities in association with Prajapatis, they should perform sacrifices. Sahayatnyam, together. Puravaja Prajapati, then, and what will happen? Anena prasavishyadvam esha vostishtaka madhuk. When you perform the sacrifices, the demigods will be pleased, and the result will be that the earth will give everything profusely. Everything what you require for your living in this world. In other words, you will not find anywhere in the Vedic tradition that you have to cut the throat and take it. You milk it. That's the system. That is why Mother Earth is considered to be Kamadhuk, a cow there. You milk the cow. In the similarly, all you need from the earth, you milk it and take it. Not completely cut the throat and finish it. Suppose you have to get the milk from a cow, you don't cut the udder, do you? You just milk the udder. In the same way, from this material nature also, whatever you require for your living here, you milk the Mother Earth and don't cut her off completely. That is what Krishna is saying. That in this verse also you will find that our consciousness won't allow that to do things. How to live in line with the nature, in tune with the nature, that we have not learned yet. Therefore, we cause trouble for ourselves. Because we have not learned this art of milking the earth. We have learned the art how to destroy the earth. That's what we are good at, isn't it? That we have developed. We have developed in such a way, Krishna is saying here, that if you don't learn this art of living, taking things from the nature the way it has been spoken in the third chapter. On the other hand, if you start trying to destroy things, and the result will be a bigger disaster waiting after that. Ishta Kamadhuk. Kamadhuk is the one who gives everything. All material desires are fulfilled by that. But that may not happen, Krishna says, if you go against that. Look at today's world, how we have not understood this principle. Instead of being peaceful in this world, able to live in this world peacefully, they have developed such weapons that they can burn the whole planet. And so many countries have got this. To burn the whole planet, they have developed these weapons. And one wonders, and not only that, the technology and the science has gone in such a way now, they have developed the technology, if they can go and stay in the moon, and fight a war in this world from there. They want to fight the war here. Controlling the war here from the moon planet. So things like that, this is where the scientist's head is working sometimes. Therefore it's always said that the material knowledge has to be in the hands of spiritually advanced people. Otherwise it will cause disaster. And that is what is in waiting. When the material advancement, materialistic knowledge or scientific knowledge, if it is not handled by people who have proper spiritual understanding, that knowledge will create disaster. If you remember, when Vishwamitra Maharshi, he has developed weapons like this, which were capable of killing in a very much higher level. And when he wanted to teach this science of what he has developed, he found only two students for that, Lord Ramchandra and Lakshmana. He says, I should teach them to only to these two students because they'll be safe in their hands. Otherwise, if I hand over this knowledge to someone else, they will create havoc. They'll create hell here. And Vishwamitra Maharshi says in the Ramayanam like that Vishwamitra Maharshi was looking for someone to whom should I teach this. Developing weapons is not a new modern thing. It used to happen in the olden days also. Bharadwaja Maharshi was known for developing the aircraft technology. That is, Bharadwaj Maharshi's own time, the technology of flying was there. And Vishwamitra Maharshi has developed so many other powerful weapons. But they will not hand them over to people who have no discrimination of this. And it was never used to control and exploit others either. So from all angles you can see that this type of weapons, and otherwise what will happen is that they will be abused, and that will create disaster for the whole earthly planet, which will not be very pleasing to Krishna. Krishna will not be pleased by such activities. But does anyone care? They have no knowledge of this because they don't study Bhagavad Gita. This is where it's coming from. That then 16, verse 16. Aham kraduraham yajna sodaham hama ushadam mandroham ahame vajyam aham agni aham hudam. Then verse 13. Mokhasha mokha armano mokha jnana vijayadasa rakshasi masunin jaiva prakriti mohinim shradaha. That's verse 12, where Krishna is talking about all the those who have got the Rakshasa nature and Asuri nature, how it develops from the material nature and how they act. Then, Mahalpanastumam Partha Devim Prakritimashrita Bhajanti Ananyamanaso Jnatva Bhudadim Avyayam. But suppose Krishna says, someone who has developed Devi Prakriti means the nature developed from the mode of goodness. Bhajanti ananyamanaso jnatva abhudadim avyayam. One who is in the mode of goodness, he will know the position of Krishna. From the Shastram he will understand. Like from the Bhagavad Gita, he will know what Krishna's role is in this creation. And when he knows that role of Krishna's hands in everything, how the material nature is functioning, then that person will not be affected by any of these things. What will happen to him? Yatva Buddha Adhima Vyayam. He will know that the cause of everything is Krishna. Krishna is behind everything. So first, his duty will be to please Krishna. His activities will be such that he will try to please Krishna. He will not do anything which will upset Krishna's nature or Krishna's management. He will not upset Krishna's management. Then, because he sees me in everything, my presence is understood. Actually, to understand Krishna's presence in everything is the first thing. And when one understands that, his activities will also be in the same way. Then, so, this is the reason, in this particular chapter you will find that how important it is, one has to live with the nature. And that is what Krishna is speaking about. Because living with the nature means understanding the nature, how the nature functions, and not to act anything which will upset the nature in any way. And this is the system of the Vedic tradition, that all along you will not find anywhere to upset the nature. Sometimes people, they go to India, when they come back, somebody told me, oh, they have constructed a new house, but there was a tree standing there in the courtyard. So they have constructed the house around the tree. They didn't cut the tree off. Rather, they constructed the house around the tree. They didn't want to cut the tree off. Why? Because that is in the minds of so many people, that this tree is there due to a particular reason. For my own comfort, I shouldn't disturb that balance of the nature. Here we talk about all the ecological balance and everything. But when it comes to our own selfish interest, it goes off. Kyoto agreement or this agreement, that agreement, every agreement we will sign. But when it comes to practical life, in day-to-day life, no one cares. No one cares. Because their economic development is the first priority. After that, everything else. Our stock market prices should go up, the shares. So unless if that doesn't happen, then all other calculations collapse there. So this is not Vedic civilization. Vedic culture is talking about this. How to live in this world properly. And this ninth chapter, particularly as I mentioned before, it completely shakes the person, that one's life, is that proper? One has to think about it very seriously. That Krishna's presence is in everything, number one. Because Krishna is present there, and we have a very close relationship with Krishna on a spiritual level, that presence of Krishna is as good as our presence also in this creation. And in order that for us to live here in a proper way, in a peaceful way, to survive here and use this life for advancing spiritual life, all these rules have to be followed. If they are not followed, it's constant anxiety created. Where is the question of any peace in this world? There is no possibility. So therefore, everything becomes very difficult. Then it becomes simply a struggle for existence, what we see today. It's because of that, that there is full ignorance about the role of the Supreme Lord and His activities and presence in this world. That that when one is seeing Krishna in everything and one will understand, one will realize that nothing exists in this world except Krishna. It's Krishna who exists in all these manifestations of Krishna, different living entities, moving and non-moving. And everything what we see is only Krishna exists. Instead, what do? We keep making, differentiating everything. And eventually we decide that Krishna is in the temple. And sometimes we think even if Krishna is there in the temple, even that we start doubting. So we fall from our spiritual consciousness. This is how we fall down. When we are falling, it's a continuously falling down from our spiritual consciousness. And when you are perfectly spiritually Krishna conscious, you realize Krishna's presence in everything and you will act accordingly. Once you have fallen down from that material consciousness, all our activities go in the wrong direction. There's a beautiful incident about this, that once a little boy, he was talking to his mother. And mother said to him that you should feed whoever comes. You should give them food. This is the principle. She taught him and trained him like that. In the meanwhile, what happened was, he heard from somebody else, only those who work hard, you should give them food. Those who are not working, they are not entitled for anything. This is the modern concept, isn't it? We always say like that. When he is not working and earning and making a living, he has no right to live in this world. He should go. It's not the place for it. Here, you should be working 10, 12 hours a day and whole life, 60, 70 years of life, and then he can eat. Otherwise, he shouldn't eat. So this is the principle. So he has heard all these things from the school. Maybe from the school only he must have heard this. Where else will you get this knowledge? So he goes home. He goes home and he tells, this is in his head. He is in confusion. Mother is telling him, you should feed food to anybody who comes. First thing to offer them food. School has told him, only those who have got the right to work, because he has learned the latest economics from the greatest Nobel winning economist, he has learned that only those who work, they keep the productivity going and they alone get the GDP high for the country. Others are all useless in the country, they should go. So he is all confused altogether. So one day, a few people came to his house for some reason. They came to his house and they were very hungry. And they were not very weak people. They were very strong men. They were very strong men. They are good physique and everything. But it so happened, by some reason or other, they got into that house and they asked them for some food. When they asked for food, this boy thought about this, what he learned at the school. And he started telling them, there is no food here. Why don't you go and work? He started asking them like this. So that time mother overheard this from the kitchen. She came out, held him by his ear, pulled him in. He was a young boy and told him, anyone who comes and asks for food, you must take it. That is a living entity. He should be fed first. After that, nobody will come and ask for food. Food is not something like money, which you can take away as much as you like. He'll only ask for food unless he is hungry. He won't ask for that. So, no discrimination is necessary there, whether he is capable of working or is not capable of working. What you should think, she taught him a better lesson than what the school has taught him. She told him that if you have got an opportunity to feed someone, you should take that as a blessing. Because that hunger of that living entity is Krishna's hunger. It's Krishna's hunger. Because that living entity is a part and parcel of Krishna. And he's asking for food and you have got this opportunity to feed him. Without thinking anything, you should have offered him food, not to talk this nonsense again, she said to him. And that day he understood the principle behind it. That It is easy to say to someone and bring all these excuses not to offer the food when somebody has come and asked for it, that he is hungry. And that was the Vedic tradition, was like that always, that it, this question was never asked whether he was capable of working. If there was food at home, it should be offered to that person if he is hungry. So like this you will see that this is what is called Sahayatya Praja Srishtva Purovaja Prajapati Anena Prasavishuddham Stishtavo Stishtakamadhuk Eshavo Stishtakamadhuk. Mother Earth will provide food for such people. Plenty of food will come to them because they have understood the nature, how the nature works. On the other hand, if we develop our selfish principles and impose that in our society, the result will be distress, suffering, more and more suffering, and reactions from our own hard-heartedness, what that comes from that. So, here Krishna says there that there are different explanations given to this verse also. When it says, Mahalpanastu mam partha prakritim devi ma ashrida bhajandyananyamanaso jnatva bhudadim avyayam. Those who are properly situated, Mahatmas, they will know these things. They are called Mahatmas who knows these principles of life. They are Mahatmas. Once somebody asked Mahatma Gandhi, what is your message to this world? He said, my life is my message, he said. That's all he could say. He said, my life is my message. So similarly, great personalities, they will understand this relationship with the material nature and Krishna and us. And we who don't understand any of this relationship, we act independently. And when we act independently, we create disturbance in the society and for the whole world. And that is what Krishna is saying there. How important it is to properly reflect on these verses in the 9th chapter. And then, after that, Krishna is saying there that Sadanam kirtayando mam yadandaschatrada vrada namasyandaschamam bhaktya nitya yukta upasade. That this is a very important verse. And that's also where we get confused a lot. Sadadam kirtayandomam yadandascha dhradavradaha. A person who has all this culture, all this samskar in him, what that person will do? He only sees Krishna in everything. And the result will be sadadam kirtayandomam. He will only glorify Krishna because Krishna is running the show. So first we have to glorify Krishna, not anybody else. Yadandascha dhradavradaha. Dhradavrata, determination is in his mind. He's very, very determined to glorify Krishna all the time. And then what else he do? Namasyandashyamam bhaktya. Continuously he pays his obeisances to me, seeing me in everything. In everything, when the show is going on in this world, he sees my presence in everything. The result is that namasyandashyamam bhaktya. That with full of devotion, because full of adoration in him, he adores me, my presence and my contribution in this creation, how the whole system is functioning so well. He observes that. And what does he do? Sadadam kirtayandomam. He cannot refrain from doing this. He has to do it. Why? Because he has recognized me properly. He has understood me. Sadadam kirtayandomam. Yadandascha dridavradaha. Namasyandaschamam bhaktya. Namasyandaschamam bhaktya. With bhakti, he is paying his obeisances to me all the time. That is his happiness in life. Why? He has understood the truth. Nitya yuktam upasade. Nitya yuktam. Not in a day. Not on a one day in a week. Like many people have this principle. Why in Vedic tradition, people always ask this question. Why Vedic system doesn't have one particular day for worship? Vedic system is saying the answer to that is our worship is 7/24. 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. That is the Vedic tradition. That is why there is not one particular day allocated for worship. Okay, people are not doing any day. That's another thing. That's another thing. But philosophy, Krishna consciousness is like that. Krishna consciousness is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That is Krishna consciousness. Not for one particular day for an hour or two. Fulfill some obligation to Krishna. No, that is not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness in this 9th chapter is like this. The word used, you can see, nitya yuktam upasade, nityam, daily, it continuously, as long as your material body, all you are seeing is the glories of Krishna in this creation. in every angle, from every side, when you look at the different activities, what goes on here, everything under Krishna's control, how it is functioning, he has come to that realization. That is why it's called Mahatmanastu Maham Partha Devim Prakritim Ashridaha Bhajanti Ananya Manaso Jnatva Bhudadima Vyayam. Ananya Manasa, he has nothing else, he doesn't want any other knowledge from anyone, because he has understood the truth. And therefore, Sadadam Kirtayandomam Yadandaschadradavradaha Namasyandaschamam Bhaktya Nityayuktamupasade. What can he do except to pay your obeisances to Krishna? When you realize this, what else can you do? Krishna is saying like this to Arjuna. And Krishna was trying to make understand Arjuna what Krishna's position is. People misunderstand things. When we have completely infected with the lower modes of material nature, passion and ignorance, we think in the other way, what Krishna has spoken before. Mokhasha mokha karma no mokha jnana vichedasa rakshasim asurim chaiva pagridim mohinim shrida. That way we goes. When you understand Mahalpanastu Maam Partha Devim Prakritimashrida Vajandyan Ananyamanaso Yatva Bhudadimavyayam, that's what will happen. Then the result will be Satatam Girtayando Maam Yadandaschatrida Vrada Namasyandascha Maam Bhaktya Nityayuktamupasadem. When Srila Prabhupada was traveling in different instances, people will ask some weird questions. Oh, if everybody gives up a job and start joining the temple, what will happen to the economy? They are asking a question like this to a person who has understood what Krishna's hands are in everything. If you ask this question to someone, for a Nobel Prize winning economist, you will have an answer. But if you ask a devotee who sees Krishna in everything, to that person, if you bring such silly arguments, all he can do is to sympathize with you. What can he do more than that? He has very often this point has come up in different ways. Devotees ask this question. Their parents will ask this question. Oh, my son has not been educated properly. Therefore, what will happen to him? And what will happen? What will happen to this world? They were more worried about the world than about their own son. If we don't have enough qualified people in this world, how the economy will run? How this will run? And here was Srila Prabhupada answering them this in the light of this chapter. He was saying to them that this nature is working not because of your degrees and diplomas and activities, what you are doing in the factory. This is not running because of that. Why? Because devotee sees there, Satatam Kirtayandomam. Devotee will only see one thing, Krishna's hands in everything. Yatandascha Dridavradaha. Then he is determined to change those who does not think like that. Because as far as the devotee is concerned, the others have not understood properly. Therefore, they are bringing up all these different fancy ideas of their economic development and their calculation. So many millions of years, at least, okay, forget about the millions of years, at least 2000 years, we were talking about economic development and making this world a happy place. Has it ever happened? Actually, the fear and the fright has developed more and more in the so-called advanced civilizations. They are more fearful than any time before now. When is the bomb going to come from the top? And this fear has developed. That is the way Maya works. Maya's ways are like that. That is why Krishna said that Prakritim Mohinim Shridaha. Prakriti's control is so strong. This is Krishna's Yoga Maya. That Yoga Maya and conjunction with Krishna in his presence, she does the job in whichever way it has to be done. And she will change the situation when we understand Krishna's position. When we don't understand Krishna's position, then we have to, with all our so-called economic development and peace initiatives and United Nations and whatever we have, and year after year, we have to fight and kill. There is no other solution to it. That's the only answer to that. Because that is how Bhagavad Gita says about that. Satatam, whereas for a devotee, he doesn't see any of these things because it has no significance as far as the existence in this world is concerned. As far as the existence of himself or as far as the existence of this whole creation is concerned, as far as the devotee is concerned, there is only one answer. What is that? Satatam kirtayandomam yadandaschatridavradaha namasyandaschamam bhaktya nityayuktamupasade. Serving Krishna, satisfying Krishna, that is the answer to all the problems. There is no other answer. Because Krishna has explained in the, why Bhagavad Gita is so important. Throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining only one thing, that it's me who is running the show, not you. And this is how I run, and that is how what he has explained. We'll discuss next Sunday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.